You are listening to the Paper Player Podcast. I'm your host, Tony, and I'm joined with my co-hosts, Josh and JB. Jeff will not be joining us this week. He's doing some nonsense. Don't know what that is. Josh, are you all done with Adventures of the Forgotten Realms?
Am I done with the Adventures of the Forgotten Realms? No. Going back to a topic we spoke about last week, when a set comes out, it comes out on Arena about 2 weeks before it ever comes out in paper. The set officially released last Friday, so my boxes didn't ship until last Friday. I got my box on Monday, or my boxes on Monday, so I brought my boxes to work Tuesday, where I started playing League with my coworker. So I've played a total of 2 AFR matches at lunch yesterday and today. And my initial reaction is that, wow, this set sucks.
That's a core set, man. You got to give it a little bit of leeway.
I won today with the 3-5 do nothing after. I won with the shark dragon, or no, the dragon turtle.
Yeah.
3-5. I tapped a dude down, which eventually ended up blocking as a last-ditch effort, but I ended up winning with 3-5 at lunch today.
That's funny, man. All right, JB, you getting any sick pickups recently? Just so you know, JB, you're known as the trade shark.
Oh, that's fine. I used to be known as that, so that's okay. I didn't get any magic in the past 2 weeks. I've been pretty busy with other stuff in my life at the moment, so I've been basically magic-free for a while. Other than looking at my collection at home here and there. But in regards to your question, I have had zero exposure to the newest set because my typical exposure is going to the pre-release, opening a bunch of packs and looking at what people get, and then trading a bit and seeing what exists in the set. So I have no idea what's in this set.
Yeah, I'm really well versed in this set. I kind of know all the key strategies, the color archetypes that exist, and then what's actually viable. 7 of the 10 are playable. One red black's the best by a mile. The other 6 of the 10 are good, and then 3 of them just don't work at all.
I opened Rogue class in my sealed pool along with that Dragon Turtle. So that's the deck I built, and I liked the Rogue class. I don't really have very much synergies. I have a couple dungeon crawling synergies, but the blue-black, it's kind of like Menace Unblockable is the strategy that seems to be cohesive with it.
Yeah, it's on-hit triggers.
Right. It's doing all right, but the set definitely feels like baby's first magic.
Like I said, it's supposed to be a core set, so yeah. All right, dudes, it's episode 10, and guess what? We got a email. The first time this podcast ever had a question via email, so
they were waiting. They were waiting for episode 10 as our first milestone. They said, yeah, I'm going to send it in on 10.
I'm excited. I didn't even know this was happening.
They're like, we got to know that this is an official podcast. Wait till episode 10 before we write it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. So this comes from Devin. He's a listener of the podcast. He's got 2 questions, actually. The first one I'm going to start off with is, how do you guys handle burnout in Magic? So JB, go ahead and tell me, because I know in the past you've kind of come in and out of Magic in waves.
I mean, I don't so much lose interest in Magic. I just tend to either have other stuff come up in my life that becomes a lot more important to me for the moment, or I have a lot of my friends leave Magic, which then turns me off because I don't really have anyone to go and hang out with at FNM or the whole point of Magic is to hang out with friends, and obviously you can make some new ones at FNM, but you feel a little more comfortable when you go into a room and you at least know some people. So in terms of burnout, I feel like a lot of the time it's more so external factors that get me to walk away from the game.
Nice. What about you, Josh?
So I can relate to this, especially over quarantine. I experienced I experienced burnout a couple times over quarantine, especially, and it was kind of weird for me too, because I was doing really well playing in online webcam events. I was getting my lists published on MTG Top 8 and stuff, I was doing really well. But then some weeks I was just like, wow, I don't want to play Magic this week. And the ways that I ended up combating that were just like being more active. Like I would ride my bike more and I would end up going to the gym more and just being more active and getting my, like, you know, brain chemistry more aligned. Even like things, small things such as like diet, just like, you know, eating more healthy, just like changing your mindset and like getting out of that rut, like the doing a little movement to your body, getting that, like, the blood flowing and, you know, your heart pumping and your brain doing its like normal chemistry and getting back to equilibrium will do like wonders for you.
Yeah, for sure. Like, definitely external factors can be contributing to it. I've never had like a true burnout where I've just dropped the game. I think I haven't gone more than like a couple weeks without playing, but I've never had like long dry spells, if you will. Like, it's always just been constant for me. And just even when friends, like JB was saying, when friends left the game, I still played. And that's just because I have like a yearning for like competition. And that's like my outlet for experiencing competition, either it being at like a low level or high level events. That's where I like to like put a lot of my mental energy from my hobby standpoint. But as far as like, I guess when we were in quarantine was like the longest time I couldn't play. And I was playing a little bit on Arena at the time, and I was playing a little bit on MTGO, but it just wasn't the same impact. So I kind of lost a little bit of drive there. But I was, and then you, Josh, actually showed me those webcam magics. And then I think I turned JB to those as well, too. And that actually got me interested in collecting cards again.
Right. I also heard some wise words once. When it comes to your hobbies, you should have one hobby that makes you one hobby that makes you money, and one hobby that you spend that money on. So, like, I like to think as Magic is my hobby that makes me money, and then my other hobby is music, whether it be like collecting records or like, you know, buying new like guitar pedals. That's the way I kind of like to see it, is to like a give and take. If I can, you know, back away and make my mind like wander in a different way for a little bit, I eventually will always come crawling back to this game.
Lucky for me, it's online magic is my one hobby that I spend money on, and real life magic is my one that I get my real money. That's how I earn my paychecks.
If you're good on MTGO, you can go infinite.
Oh, for sure.
So I wanted to play a little bit before the whole lockdown thing, and I kind of lost my interest until we started to getting together like maybe bi-weekly or once every month to just play tournament magic with a couple of our friends.
Yeah, like your friends will do like wonders. We're social creatures, and that's what we come to this game for, is the gathering. So if you're not getting, you know, enjoyment from Magic the Gathering, try gathering with another group of friends.
Mm-hmm. For sure, man. All right, and then he's got a second question, which is kind of a follow-up, and it's actually related to something we kind of talked about last week, but it's: when the meta is shifting as fast as it does in Modern, how do you decide what deck you would pick to jump in Modern with?
I always just play what I have. I've always said, if you have the land, you can play what you want. So, like, I just play whatever lands I have. That's my, like, shitty take, or that's my poor take. But that's honestly how I approach it, is I play what I have. I try to spend as little money as possible on competitive Magic, because, like, this is a very expensive hobby.
Oh yeah. JB, what do you think? How do you find a deck that you want to kind of pick up and play? What kind of decisions do you make, especially when a meta is shifting as quickly as it is?
I honestly don't have like a foolproof plan. I kind of look at MTG Top 8 or whatever tournament reporter there is, take a look at the decks, and then look for something that piques my interest. So like with the blue-red thing, Murktide specifically made me interested in playing blue-red again in Modern. And because of Murktide, I think I got lucky and jumped into that boat right before it went like super nuts. So yeah. I kind of got in early, if you want to call it that, but it was kind of nice being ahead of the curve for once.
Being like a tournament grinder for a period of my life where I was actively going to like old school PTQs every single weekend, I learned quickly that you have to like do a lot of shifts in your decks, and that costs a lot of money. And I've sold out, maybe not sold out, but I sold a huge portion of my collection one time. And I remember how bad I felt like months later needing cards that I just sold. And I just kind of made like a vow, like never sell again. So since that day, that thing that was like 2012, I've just collected stuff. I've been playing with the same fetches since 2010. Like mine are beat the hell out of. Like they're just worn and withered, and I'm still gonna play them until they're completely tattered or no longer sleevable. But I guess I'm fortunate enough to have the ability to shift from deck to deck.
On that same topic, I had my Khan's flooded strands for like ever, and then. One time I was like, I needed money. I was purging a bunch of my cards and I sold my flooded strands to someone.
Yeah.
And then about 2 months later, I get back into Magic and I was like, wow, I need flooded strands. And then I ended up buying my flooded strands back from that same person at a lower price.
Oh, nice.
So it worked out in my favor, which is why it's funny. But It definitely did feel bad that I had to get flooded strands again.
Yeah.
See, that's the one thing that I think I differ from a lot of people, is that I enjoy trading a lot. So moving from one deck to another is something that's fun to me, because I get to do a bunch of trading and talking to people and looking around for cards. A perfect example is that I picked up my fourth Renin 6 recently, and someone I know asked if anyone had any for trade, and I said, yeah, I'll trade mine. I'm not using it right now, but I'll trade it anyways. I don't really care. And I think that's like fun to me.
Yeah, I'm that same way.
I was really deep in the trade game, but when I usually end up trading, the things that I'm looking for specifically are either brand new cards, and I'll trade aggressively for them, or it's like, I know this is high in value, so I want more of them. So like, I had 6 Force of Wills. I went down to 4 recently, but I have like 9 Thoughtseize now. So it's like, eventually I'll use those Thoughtseize to trade, but I'm not looking for anything to keep because I have the majority of stuff I want.
You're talking to a guy who has 12 Murktides right now.
Yeah, I mean, dude, more power to you. You should just keep collecting.
I used to be like that, but now when I trade, I'm mostly like, I don't really want Magic cards anymore or crave them as much as I used to. But now when I'm looking through binders, things that catch my eye that are like, I need to have it, are like the full art stuff. I'm really a fan of the new full art stuff.
Yeah, the glamorous looks of a lot of the new cards are very glamorous looking.
Mm-hmm. Right, I need these $10 full art expressive iterations. Ugh.
Get them while they're cheap, man. This is the time.
Japanese version right now of that exact expressive iteration.
And like, all of a sudden, Counterspell's legal in Modern, and now looking at like the Japanese cool like Strixhaven Counterspells are like $35. I'm like,
yeah. Oh, they look so good though.
Even like the full art Commander Legends one, which like only came in collector packs, I think those are like $10.
Mm-hmm. What's the coolest version of Counterspell?
It's that full art. I like
that Strixhaven one.
Yep.
Which full, that one you think is?
The alt art with the special name in the corner on the like Japanese border with like traditional art.
Yeah, I know the most expensive one is the one from Kanga. No, there's even more. Well, maybe is it beta? It could be beta. I think maybe alpha. I thought there was a promo one that has like a magic carpet on it, but it's like I've never seen it.
It's like the 7th edition alt, the one with the where it's got the mana cost on the left hand side. That's like a test print.
Yeah, that's a test print. I think 7th edition foil is the most expensive. Yeah,
that actually might be correct. 7th edition foils are like insane those are the only black borders in that set.
You can get the F&M promo ones too. I'm sure those go for probably well over 100 now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So our topics for today, we're going to talk about two different things. One, Wizards made an announcement, or I should say Hasbro made an announcement, that pack prices are going to be going up by an estimate cost of 10%, which we'll kind of get into that. And the second topic is we're going to talk about, what is it called? The Historic Horizons, and kind of where the face of the game looks from a separation of online and paper play. So first, we'll start off with the packs. So what do you guys think as a whole that these things are going up like 10%?
They've been charging $10 a pack for the past 2 years, so the pack prices have already gone up.
Yeah, I agree that there was a stealth increase because people just... I mean, you're opening a pack to open cool stuff, right? So you're paying for the promo pack because it's going to have all the cool stuff that you want.
You really can't even get draft boosters anymore. You can...
Yeah.
So, like, will people even see that quarter? And speaking as a person who does buy draft boosters. I just bought 4 draft boxes. There was a point in time pre-Kaladesh where I would do the same thing. I would buy 4 boxes every set, and I would get them for $89 a box. I haven't been able to get a box for less than $120 in the past year and a half. So, like, the prices have already gone up. Like,
And I don't see a big problem with it. Maybe it's just because a lot of the times when I'm buying packs, it's on a whim or, like, on a gamble. So it's not a huge issue to me because I'm not buying, like, boxes to open.
Sure. Yeah, I guess I don't really buy sealed product as much. This would be more devastating if we had a bigger draft culture in the Milwaukee area. It's large, but it's not as big as it once was. I remember it used to be like, I could find a draft any day of the week, and now that's just not the case.
COVID killed it hard.
Yeah. How do you think this is going to impact stores? Because from a player standpoint, if my $4.29 pack goes up to $4.69 or 79 cents, that's really not that big of a change to me when considering draft boosters. And kind of where it would hit a little bit is if we're looking at when they did that super premium collector booster for Double Masters where they were $100 packs. I mean, what's $10 more? But that does add up when you buy 10 packs, you've now spent an additional what you could have bought another pack with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So hang on. These, like, collector booster packs are going to go up 10% too?
All of it, because it's based on the reason why the prices, if you read the little...
cost the same more to produce.
It's not a production thing. It's the transportation that's going up.
Mm-hmm.
But they still cost, like, it still costs the same amount to transport, like, a set booster box as it does to a double master collector booster box.
You gotta put that cost onto the consumer.
Yeah, they're offloading it into the pack price now instead of just eating it or assuming it when they decide to make the pricing.
Dummy.
Sure. So it's on those premium collector boosters. I don't know if we're actually going to see, because technically they don't have an MSRP, but do you think this is going to hit, like, secret layers?
Don't they already charge a fat price for the stupid delivery fee anyways?
They could lower the price $10 and not give me this giant box of cardboard that, you know, I don't need.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. They should offer a price like, we'll put this in a padded envelope for you instead. Like, screw that box.
Give me 5 top loaders.
Yeah. Those
are actually in demand.
Mm-hmm. I still really want to put Exodia into that ultimate secret layer box. You know, like the 5 fetch land one.
Yeah.
Just, like, whip out a giant box with Exodia in it.
Like, in a briefcase. It sure. Looks like a briefcase.
Uh-huh.
Put it like a double briefcase.
Yeah. So, from a store standpoint, they're going to be, you know, buying more product. 10% on, like, a store that orders 100 draft boosters, that's a real amount of money. That's not something to, like, scoff at. And sure, that's going to get passed on to the consumer eventually. But stores as it is, I think we talked about this a little bit in the past, but they're just already drowning in, like, dead product, if you will, especially draft boosters.
See, and that was my point I was going to bring up in contention with what you were talking about, is that I think there's product that isn't draft boosters that are much worse for stores because they end up sitting on the shelves way longer.
Like what?
Such as?
A lot of those dual decks just sit around for years and years and years, or, you know, just like things that don't have good cards printed in them tend to just, like, waste on the shelf for forever until the store just throws them away and takes it as a loss.
Do we see those products really anymore? I mean, we see, like, the set theme packs. I don't know how popular those are.
Might be referring to the Commander products. This last, like, 2 waves of Commander products have not been good. They haven't had any docksides, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I still think they sell out pretty well.
They for sure sell, but, I mean, every time I go to a store, there's no shortage of them.
Mm-hmm. There's always a couple, like, sitting on the shelf.
Maybe people aren't buying them at their LGS either, because at Walmart's always pick clean.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe, like, we as a whole should stop shopping at Walmart and start supporting our local game stores, but...
I do when the product's available. So, like, for example, our local game store ran out of collector boosters. Well, I got some from Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Like, when the product's not readily available like that, I'm going to shop somewhere else. So I'd love to spend my money there, but when Walmart might have it, or Target, whatever, those major box stores, I'm just going to go there.
I mean,
I'm just guilty of being at Walmart and, like, oh, I'll go check the Magic stuff.
Yep.
I mean, try my best to look at the local game stores that I can reach pretty easily to see if they have singles that I like, as well as, like, an example of choosing local over online or whatever. But, you know, obviously with singles, it's a little tougher just because a lot of places might not have the exact cards that you need. So it's just like, oh, got to go bulk buy online.
Exactly. I mean, and most of the time when I am looking for a card, I'm looking for four ofs, right? Mm-hmm. So in a store might have a single copy or two copies. Any high in demand card, it's just, you kind of have to do a little bit of traveling to kind of ping all the stores. Some stores might have lots of copies, but they're real hard to come by. Usually people have like one, and you got to pick up one, and then you're like, man, this kind of stinks.
Dragon Rage Channeler, right. Man. An uncommon that nobody has. Right.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to get at. My problem is, like, it's never hard for me to get the rares I need. It's always hard for me to get the bot scours I need.
Yeah, if you're talking about the little piddly stuff, I understand why stores don't take the effort to, like, list it or put it out. Or it's like, you know, go look in our, you know, draft chat. Go find it in there. But when it comes to anything like Dragon Rage Channeler, that card is just so high in demand. And it's like a mythic uncommon. You just never see it.
Mm-hmm. Right. I played in like 6 drafts and none of those drafts had one.
Yeah.
I played in like 6 sealeds and none of those sealeds had one. Yeah, it was crazy.
Tony's box had no uncommons.
Yeah, I mean, I think my days of buying boxes on Amazon are done. Oh, and I only bought the premium stuff on Amazon. I when it came to like Strixhaven or standard boosters, I just went to the store to buy those because we're talking a $10 difference, and I'd rather pay the extra $10 to have it in my hands right now. Whereas with Time Spiral Remastered, stores were like over $90 higher than what they were on Amazon. So I was just being like, okay, I'll just get them on Amazon and I can wait the week. Or even with Modern Horizons 2, I did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And not that I don't want to support those stores, it's just, when it comes to like $80, $90, it's like, okay. And that's what happens to game stores in general, just with board games. When board games reach a certain threshold, like there are a lot of board games that are manufactured that are like $100. You can find them on Amazon for $65. Like I'm not going to give the store an extra $35 because the price is just not competitive, but they're also buying it probably at $65. But a board game that's $40 in the store and $30 on Amazon, I'll give the $10 to the store.
Right.
There's like a threshold there.
Right. Because, mm-hmm. like, this is an expensive hot, and $80 is, like, real money to, like, the average Magic player. $80 isn't nothing to scoff at. None of us are, like, millionaires, right?
No.
So, like...
Little do you know.
Like, that's, like, nothing to scoff at, and, like, it adds up.
Well, it can be used to buy other things, you know? Like, that $80 I didn't spend, I could buy more singles with that, you know?
But right.
Instead, I will buy my product online, wait for it to come in a week, and then I'll use my $80 on singles at the store.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's mostly how I am, too. I am guilty of maybe being a reason why boxes sit on shelves, because I buy most of my draft boxes online, but I do try to spend most of my money on singles in stores. I buy almost every time I go to an event, I'm buying some kind of pack because I have to scratch the itch.
Mm-hmm.
I try to, you know, I want these stores to stay around. I want a place to play Magic. I want a place to gather. So I want it around.
Absolutely. Like I think we're all in the same boat where we want a place to play. All right. So then this next topic is the Historic Horizons, which is really controversial because this is the first time that we see a true divide between online Magic, and that's, I'm going to refer to online Magic as Arena, and in-person play. And we had cards like that before, but they weren't anything that would be desired or used. So I don't know if you guys have looked at any of the spoilers, but there are some very Hearthstone-esque cards in there that can only be used in a digital format.
Like, the one they showcased was the Davriel Planeswalker. Davriel, yep. Soulbroker, which has an uptick that lets you, until your next turn, an opponent attacks you and a Planeswalker, or when an opponent attacks you or a Planeswalker you control, they discard a card, and if they can't, they have to sacrifice an attacking creature. And then it's gotten an Abinus ability, which says, accept one of Davriel's offers and accept one of Davriel's conditions. And then there's 8 of these offers and conditions, which I'm not going to read out loud, but they vary in like rant, like power level, and they're, some of them are really good and some of them are like really like detrimental to you. And the gimmick is that whenever you activate this ability, you're going to get 3 random of these abilities presented to you. You'll pick one and you'll get it. And like some of these abilities are like conjure a card or whatever, or something right. gets perpetually -2/-2 for the rest of the, like, ever. Like, yeah. If you shuffle this card into your deck and you draw it at a later time, which is something you can only track online,
right?
It's still got -2/-2, so, like, it's definitely got some weird mechanics. You will have to look up the card to really understand it yourself. It's kind of hard to express via speaking about it on a podcast, but
yeah.
It's definitely something we've never seen and something that will never happen in paper.
Yeah. JB, do you want to kind of pick a... should start off with, like, the most complex one, just because there's just, like I said, a million words on it that are actually not on the card. This is a way for Wizards to print more words on a card than ever before. And then, JB, do you have the spoiler open? Do you want to read Pool? Okay. I'll read Pool of Vigorous Growth. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Momir, the format Momir on Magic Online, but that was something kind of its own thing. But this is just an artifact for green into one. It has X. Tap, discard a card, create a token that's a copy of a random creature card with mana value X. Activate this only as a sorcery. So if you spend 3 mana, tap it, discard a card, you get a random 3-drop that exists in the historic format. That's legal in the historic format.
If we don't get Phage the Untouchable, we riot, right?
Well, you just never... everybody will skip 7. That's why you do it on Momir. You usually skip 7.
Right, that was the...
Was that the one that milled your own deck?
No, you just, if you didn't cast this from your hand or at the end of the battlefield, you lose.
I know there was like another demon that would mill all lands until you hit a non-land, and you would just instantly lose when you accidentally cast that at like 6.
So, JB, like, what do you think about this as a whole? Like, what do you think this is going to do for Arena? What do you think this is going to do for the community, for the paper community?
I've always liked Hearthstone. I've never hated it. I've kind of got out of it just because I enjoy Magic more because of the complexity with like instants and, you know, other like state-based effects that are happening. I think there's a lot more going on in Magic, and I think I'm okay with some of the Hearthstone mechanics coming over to Magic to add to it. So I'm fine with it. I think it will definitely kill it in paper, because it's going to be impossible to do any of this unless there's like an app that you can use at the same time, which everyone knows about. But that's fine by me.
Well, you couldn't do it online because there's, like Josh said, go ahead and explain Perpetual or Perpetuality.
Well, so, Davriel, he even like there, one of his deals or whatever that you can accept gives us something, a perpetual that I don't
know. He has just a -3.
Yeah, his -3 says target creature perpetually gets -3/-3, which means forever, the rest of the game, if this card gets exiled and brought back out of exile somehow, it still has -3/-3.
Well, I could deal with the exile in the graveyard, right? But I tuck it into your library, you shuffle that in. How do I differentiate that from a different copy?
I mean, only you can track that with your computer, and you're trusting that the computer knows what it's doing, but...
Correct.
Couldn't slip a piece of paper into the sleeve?
See, that gets weird.
Right.
What if you... then the thickness of the sleeve, it gets weird there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's why my CEDH proxy commander deck is 100% proxy down to the basic lands so that everything is homogenous.
Yes. I mean, you could do that with like a paper, but what happens when you're shuffling and the paper falls out?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like there's just
Well, then you just pick it up and put it in one of those creatures. It doesn't really matter which one because it's the same as every other one in the deck.
Well, what we're saying is, what if it wasn't the one, right? And you drew one and it was supposed to be that one, right? It's more of, and then you realize it after the fact. You're like, well, that could have been the one. You don't know.
Mm-hmm. Like
there's,
that.
Like, don't even try to do this in paper.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, that's the end of, I think what we're seeing here is the idea that we'll never see historic in paper. That's the end of that. And I think that format was actually on the rise and clearly surpassing Pioneer, but now that's just not a reality anymore.
I mean, I was really mad at them for making flying tokens or trample tokens already, because I think that's really, really messy and looks like garbage on the field. So I guess... you know, I should be technically mad at this and not one in paper, but, you know, that's fine. I don't need it in paper.
I don't think you'll see the keyword tokens again.
Good. Yeah, they'll probably avoid that. That was a weird Ikoria thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, they'd probably go back to it. Who knows? But just, so there are cards that are exclusive online. There's a randomness element that they're going to be adding, which, don't get me wrong, from a gameplay standpoint, is fun, but it clearly can't be executed in paper. And then on top of that, there's just no hope for Historic being a real paper format, and I think that's what hurts the most about this.
On one hand, I hate everything about all of this because it makes the game look childish. It makes the game look like there's like no skill involved. It could put off someone from trying to get into the paper format, and like some like a layperson or someone who's like just venturing into the like world of Magic. Not that you would, I guess, like you're not going to be playing Historic if you're just venturing into the world of Magic, but I feel like there is the possibility they could put you off from paper Magic. But on the other hand, I do appreciate that this is only happening online. I appreciate that it's happening only in Historic. I appreciate that, like, it's like I get the video game aspect from it, because sometimes I do just want to play a video game. Sometimes I don't want to have, you know, the overthinking that I get when I play Modern or Legacy.
See, that's my thing, is this is taking that video game aspect of Hearthstone that everyone, you know, said they kind of liked or whatever, and sticking it into Magic, which has all these intricacies already, so that I'm pumped about that.
Right.
So I think the big issue that we're going to probably run into, and let me kind of elaborate on it, is this can't be a paper format, and I think this is a way, tinfoil hat time, that Arena is going to get around paying back people for cards. They're going to nerf them, because you can actually, these aren't going to print, these aren't one-to-one on print, so you can actually change these. Let's say Davriel is too good of a card, you can nerf them. You can actually change what the card says.
I would be okay with them moving towards like an Arena release of a set and a paper release of a set. And then that way that like we get our we go back to like our old Magic the Gathering that we love, that we get in paper, and then on Arena you still get the video game flashy, splashy, fast paced, you know, action paced, you know, enjoyment that you get out of a video game with the Magic flavor.
How do you feel about the cards that they print that don't have like perpetual or random abilities, and they just have, let's say they use, like, the Wizards gets rid of their testing team and they want to put a set, or they want to put a card in a set in the future from now, and they use this, like, let's pretend the Oko is in this, and they alter Oko, and then Oko comes to PAX years later. How do you feel about that?
That's a weird thought.
The new,
that's
Oko?
Where I think they're going.
we're going to get another Oko, which is just the same Oko, but it costs 4, and it's that fixed one that they released or whatever.
Well, let's pretend Oko never existed, right? And in this set, there's an Oko, and they didn't test it properly, and it's not scaled, and they adjusted its number, and then we get that Oko 2 years later from now.
So paper. let's pause for a second, and instead of Oko, let's use Teferi Time Raveler instead, because sure. The Teferi Time Raveler got all the bans at 3 mana or whatever, and the fixed version of Teferi that they released 2 weeks ago was the same card, only it costed 4 mana, just a colorless mana more.
Yep.
So how would you feel if, like, next year we got Teferi Time Raveler and it was 4 mana, and, like, that was like, okay, now you can only use, this is the official variant of
No, not that. Not altering physical paper cards.
What he means is they put it in on Arena, test it with the players playing the card. If it's too broken, they fix it, and then 2 years later, they print a physical version of the fixed card.
So using Arena kind of as like a PTR for paper?
Yes.
Yes.
I think that's kind of a fun idea. I mean, I am pro separating Arena cards from paper cards so that paper releases aren't as wonky as they have been for the past 18 months.
Yeah. So I guess I feel very opposed to that, only for the sake of, if they were to do that on Arena, the best part about new cards coming out is the discovery phase. Well, if we know how Sarkhan plays out and it gets nerfed and then it gets printed, that card's going to immediately, we're going to know the exact power level of it. So that kind of takes away from that ability. That's kind of where I'm going with this, is the discovery phase of Magic. I know there's a very little one nowadays just because we're in the age of information of how quickly things go from point A to point B and how fast formats get discovered. But Sarkhan being printed, and then we've been playing with a version of it or a fixed version of it, and then they finally bring it to print, and then 2 years later we get it, feels really weird.
See?
It does.
I don't have an issue with that. I think I brought it up back when we were talking about the pre-release, like right before the pre-release weekend. And I said that I'm happy that these sets come out early on MTGO, because then I know exactly what I'm looking for at the pre-release when I want to trade or get cards, because there's a bunch of decks already built and I don't have to think about it, because I suck at making decks. I don't want to think about that. I just want to put some stuff together and play.
Right.
So I'm fine with that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and then the example Josh gave, where it's like if they actually just altered like a Teferi and then going forward, I would be super opposed to that.
Right, that sounds like bad time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just you're errating a bunch of cards, and what you would essentially do is this. Let's take Forcible, for example, where it's, you know, $100 card, and then they errate it to be instead of discard one blue card or exile one blue card, you exile two. Well, that changes the conditions of that card so greatly that it probably loses all value.
Right, that's not even Legacy playable anymore.
It just dies.
Didn't they do that for, like, Yu-Gi-Oh? They just do that all the time?
Yeah, they did a mass errata, and a lot of people left the game.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, that's cards... a perfect example of why it's terrible.
Yeah, cards that you, like, for example, there's a card in Yu-Gi-Oh called Sangan. When it dies, you get to go and search for something with 1,500 or less. Old copies of that set that. And then in the future copies, it says, if you did this, you cannot special summon this turn. So they're two different cards on how they read. And clearly, they're only using the new version, so the old versions were errated, and that game is just every single card is a chapter book, so get ready.
I remember that card from when I played that years ago.
It was heavily playable, until it was actually banned until they errated all the banned cards to make them horrible.
That's like one of the best cards.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a weird feeling. It's a weird time. I do like that Historic is kind of distinguishing itself from paper elements. We're never going to see this in paper, so maybe it'll be fun. But as far as Pioneer being existing on Historic, I think that, or on Arena, is dead.
I think they don't want that either. I think maybe I'm hopeful. Maybe Wizards is trying to separate, you know, Arena from paper, and they want paper to flourish in its own way. Because that is kind of like a good way to have two different revenue streams. Because like if you got people still scratching the itch with the video game and they're still like, you know, fiending to crack packs. Like if you're giving them more like of each different, you know, outlet, they're going to spend more money, right? There's more to collect.
Mm-hmm. Options are good.
Yeah.
And by that, Pioneer is not a good option.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a good format. And we all kind of agree on that.
I think they're doubling down on Modern as like the premier like format to get into if like with your
old stuff. Well,
yeah,
kind of old stuff.
With, you know, the releases that we've just had with Time Spiral.
Mm-hmm. I'd be all for that. I hope they keep doing that. I really do hope they just do like maybe original Ravnica remastered and just make it. I don't know. Maybe Alara remastered. I don't know, where it's like a re-envisioning of it, and then just throw better mana bases. Who knows? But I would love to exit or play those formats once again.
Lorwyn remastered.
They'd have to do two. Talking my language.
They'd have to do a Lorwyn one, and then they'd have to do a Shadowmoor one. To try to get all of those into one set would be so difficult.
Right.
Like you, because everybody's gonna want the, you know, the harbingers, or what are the harbingers? The, you know, the ones that you search Harbinger for something and put it on top of it. Is that Harbinger?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, there's like the Tree Folk one, and an Elemental one, a Goblin one, a Fairy one, an Elf one. To try to print like 10 tutors at the uncommon slot would basically take up all your uncommon slots.
Right.
So you'd have to do one in each. But, I mean, Time Spiral Remastered did a great job, and not that the set itself was good, even though Time Spiral did have some bangers in it. The thing that I think we're going to be seeing for the every promotional until it gets stale is that old border.
Good. That's what I want.
I don't think it'll get stale, but yeah, that's what I want.
I'm staring at an old border Chalice of the Void Japanese right now.
Yeah.
More old border and more full art. Give me the topical.
You'll probably end up with the Preordained as the next one, which will be a big one too. And then they'll probably always do like one bomb or one awesome like blue card to keep it going. That way people always get drawn to the packs, like a Ponder-esque card. Like all they need to do in the next one is a Cryptic Command and bam, you're selling packs.
How long until they start repeating or printing old cards that were already in old border as new old border?
Maybe Portal 3K, like P3K cards. I'd be okay with that.
That'd be cool.
Because those things are like stupidly expensive for no reason. And they've reprinted Imperial Recruiter enough times, which thank God they have. Because, man, before the initial reprinting of that card was like $450 before that.
Imperial Seal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I mean, as an example, something that I really, really want is Old Border Japanese Force of Wills, but they don't exist. They aren't real. Like, there were no Japanese cards during Alliances, so that card doesn't exist. So do you think there's ever a chance in the future where they print Force of Will with the old border, maybe not the same art, but with the old border in all languages?
I'm sure. Most
For sure. That's going to be something that's like, you know, break button if we're, or like, you know, break glass in case of, you know, we're plummeting this December.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, bam, get this in there. Now.
Yeah, I mean, not Force of Will specifically, but that idea of like an old card that's already popular that, you know, people want that, I mean, has an old
Force of Will would be, Force of Will would be that card, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just has to be.
Well,
right. I can't think of any other card that people would desire old border foil right now other than reserve list cards.
I was about to say reserve list, but we won't talk about that today.
No.
Docklands.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are for sure coming.
Oh, that's another great example because you're talking about Ravnica. Dark Confidant has an old foil border printing for a promo. Will they ever release just the plain old border?
In non-foil, that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it, though. Not in that art. Maybe with the Modern Horizon or the Modern Masters art.
Yeah, plain. For sure.
Probably not with the Bob Maher art. I would doubt that would happen.
That's what I want.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people want that. They're really weird. When it comes to, like, judge promos, they're really strange in where they go with those. Like, the decisions on that are just, I don't know who they're consulting, but they really, it's just it's such random cards.
Mm-hmm.
Right, especially now with, like, the Judge Academy.
It's yeah.
Like, weird, like, Gitrog monster.
Yeah.
Hey, people like that card.
That's, like, my favorite commander. Like, yeah. And I obviously want one, but, like, it was a very weird choice for a judge foil.
Well, that's the perfect example, is that there's a lot of EDH fans who want that card.
But it's not even like a top tier EDH general.
Yeah,
it's
but just people like, love Gitrog.
I guess you're not right. Do people like lands?
People like anything that says like play an additional land is always like $8-$10 worth in EDH, I swear. Right. That are not like Explorer or Growth Spiral. It's specifically a creature that says like every turn you get to play an additional land. People love those cards.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Dude, Oracle Moldiah was like $50 at one point.
Yeah, but why wasn't that the judge foil?
Fair. I mean, because it's a strange question, yeah.
Gitrog can be your general. Oracle can't.
But, like, how many judges go to play Commander? How many
all
judges?
A lot.
How many judges are judging Commander stuff? How many judges are judging, you know, Modern stuff?
Sure.
I guess, like, sure. Oracle's not a Modern card either, so, like... That's a bad argument.
I mean, that's the beauty of EDH. I know JB hates any form of EDH, but realistically, without that, there would be so many cards that just are bulk because you couldn't use them any. Well, you could use them on tabletop, but EDH has like brought tabletop to stores, if that makes any sense.
Right. Yeah, I get it. I mean, it's a casual market, so it's like people who sit, they call it kitchen table, right? Kitchen table magic. Mm-hmm. So you just got kitchen table.
Yeah, I just think of the card specifically, like Sword of the Animus. And I think it just got a reprint recently, or it might have, I don't remember. But that card specifically gets played nowhere except EDH, and it was like 12.
Sword of the Anime.
Yeah. That's the one that you attack, and then I think you get a basic land and put it on the battlefield tapped, I believe. So, you know, one of those, add an additional land to, you know, whatever you got to do.
Game in Magic Originals or something?
No, Magic Origins.
Origins. I won that pre-release because I had my Sword of the Anime was my promo. And
that card was good.
And like, no, I would attack and go get a land. And like, they'd be like, what? Like, do you have to deal combat damage? I'm like, no, read this card. And they're like, what?
It's attack draw card, which people don't understand. And it's actually a draw and it ramp. It's more than what it says it does. People just didn't realize it.
You thin the hell out of your deck.
I had two in my deck, actually. My promo was one and I had one non-foil in the deck.
Live it up, kid. All right, guys. I think we nailed Historic Horizons. I hope that I'm gonna play it more on Arena because honestly, with how the current draft format is, I know you guys don't do this, but from an Arena standpoint, I get really bored of a draft format because within a week I've played 20, 30 drafts maybe. So I kind of just I'm done with it. So unless a format is enticing, I have no interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I do have a question of the week, and the question that I got for episode 10 is with. Everything having like a theme, like Strixhaven had like the, what were those called?
School.
The Mystical Archives and the showcase versions. What do you think Innistrad's going to use, or what would your prediction be that Innistrad's going to have for a showcase? Like what is their theme going to be?
There's got to be like a...
There are leaks of promotional pictures that there is some kind of gimmick with Innistrad. I don't remember what the images look like, but if I would like be choosing what kind of like art direction I would choose, I would kind of go with like the Castlevania like art style, right?
Gothic horror.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's I think that's like a nail on the head right there. It's got to go that direction.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, D&D kind of had some of that stuff with some of its creatures and a couple of the planes or whatever. It definitely has some of that gothic horror stuff in there. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. What, like,
really big chests with like the really flowing hair and like the, you know, big giant swords is what I want. You know, the Castlevania like traditional gothic vampire.
No, not the theme of this at. I'm talking about like specifically showcase. So like with the D&D, the showcase cards looked like they were ripped out of like a page of the D&D like actual manuals, the monster manuals.
Yeah, that's what I mean? I'm going at with the art style.
I thought JB said something differently.
Oh, I was talking about myself.
Yeah, so that's got to be it. Because what was there was the Keldheim one, which was kind of like Viking-esque. Like, I don't know how to like call it, but
kind of like scrolly and like wall.
Yeah, there
like
you go.
Wall art kind of, or like mosaic art deco.
Started with It started with Throne of Eldraine, right? Because they did like the storybook versions.
I think that was the first one, yes.
And then after that came Ikoria, where they did the Godzillas.
No, there was the Ugins and stuff. There was full art corset.
Right, right. You remember how flopped that Teferi was? They had like five different printings of the same card.
Yeah. That was after that. And then came...
The real OG was the Japanese alt art Planeswalkers from War of the Spark. That was the first one.
Oh, those didn't come in packs, did they? Those came in...
Yeah, they did.
Oh, they did. You're right.
The what cards?
The Japanese alt art. The anime ones?
In Japanese packs? Yeah, they only came in the Japanese packs, though.
Mm-hmm. No, and the F&M promos, too, had them.
No, those were the Secret Layer inserts. Maybe, I don't remember where they were. I forget.
Secret Layer inserts were the glass, stained glass. The F&M promos had the possibility of giving you the anime alt art in Japanese. And then the Japanese packs had the alt art at like a 50% chance instead of the regular art.
It was those, like, you know, those little foil packs that have three cards in it you get for winning an F&M or whatever.
There you go. Yep.
That's what he's talking about. That's how
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the first time they did that.
What was Theros?
I'm trying to think of a card in Theros.
They had the constellations.
Oh, that's right. The constellations were cool.
Oh yeah, with the demigods.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh.
Yeah, those were cool. Those things have been awesome so far. Like, I don't think they've missed on one yet.
Right. I've like the D&D ones kind of are okay. I like the full art stuff. I like more than most of the like fancy stuff.
Yeah. People really didn't like the sketch stuff from Modern Horizons, but if I had to choose, I would choose old border, sketch, and then like full art. So I am definitely a fan of the sketch.
Man, I think there was a miss. What was Battle for Zendikar? Or whatever the new Zendikar. Zendikar Rising. Did that one stink? I don't remember any.
They had those weird landfall ones. All the landfall ones had that weird
like border. Yeah.
Where it was like, the kind of like fractally kind of star.
Oh, yeah. Those were terrible. Those have been the worst ones.
On the topic of the sketch, I normally don't like. I don't like the sketch, but I do like that the sketch flavor text, the cards that have flavor text on the sketch, tell you the art direction that they gave you. Like, if you look at the sketch noble or ignoble hierarch, it says, create your classic noble hierarch, only this time use a mirror image of your classic noble hierarch, only this time use a goblin.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, and I love that.
I mean, really that's part of it, right?
Like, all the ones that have the flavor text give you the art direction.
I also like that the rarity is all colored in, like, crayon. It's great.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't normally like... I like that part of it. I don't like the, like, kind of blank and, like... I don't like the, like, smudgy colors, really.
They're medium.
The full art cards are what really get me. It's just my cup of tea, I guess. I need more full art Scalding Tarns.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that I could get no art lands other than the Secret Layers, because those are my favorite.
They already like do the have. Oh, like, no art. Gotcha.
Yeah, zero. I mean, they have in the Secret Layers with all the rules text on them, which is the best.
I do like that a lot.
But they're just so expensive to get, like, five of each. It sucks.
Right. That I can't imagine. I like wanted to buy them, but it takes a lot for me to buy a secret rare. The last one I bought was the Blackest Magic one because I really, really liked that soul ring.
Yeah.
I spent $50 on that soul ring because traded all of it. I traded the Teferi to JB.
I was about to say, I kind of like the Teferi from that one.
The Teferi's cool. I really liked, actually, when I bought it, I bought it because the soul ring and the ponder, and then they released the old border ponders, and I was like,
yeah, I don't want this anymore.
Get dunked on.
Right.
God, if those old border ponders were the lower one art, I think they'd be $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Dude, that's coming.
All right, guys, that's a cast. As always, we're on Facebook. Give us a like and a listen. You can follow us on Twitter. And just like Devin did this week, go ahead and give us send us a question at paperplayerpodcast@gmail.com. Man, our email or podcast is a tongue twister.
Go, Pack, go.
Yeah, I know. All right, see ya. Do you guys need lessons on card evaluation? Because $5 a minute is what I'll charge.
A minute?
Portable hole, do you?